grand hour. Good morning. It's the 11th of July. I am going to do a double billing this morning. First off, on a show that ran for 14 years, from 1934 to 1948. It's Dick Tracy. I wasn't able to find too much on it in terms of the actors, the writers, at least for this, although I know it's the original air date was the 7th of March, 1938. That would have been the fourth season. I believe prior to that, Dick Tracy only ran in 15-minute episodes. It's considered a juvenile drama. That, I don't know where they come up with that. It's a little bit more than, some of the stories are a little more sophisticated than for the juvenile audience. But we'll have at it. I'm Arthur, and this is the Grand Hour.
Protector of law and order. Boys and girls, aside from the actual trees destroyed in forest fires, can you think of what else is destroyed? Well, fires destroy the life-giving qualities in the soil besides killing the seeds that would ordinarily grow into more trees. They kill the wildlife that's part of every forest, the birds, animals like deer, squirrels, rabbits, chipmunks, and many, many others. Think of this. If there were nothing but forests in the states of Connecticut, Delaware, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, New Jersey, Rhode Island, and Vermont, and all those forests were destroyed, there wouldn't be as much as was destroyed by fire in just the year 1943. No country, not even the United States, can afford to lose that much lumber. And 70% of the fires were caused by human carelessness. Now here's what you can do to help prevent fires when you're out in the woods. After using a match, blow it out, break it in two, pinch the burnt end until you're sure it's dead. You can be certain the match will be harmless because you won't care to pinch a burnt end while it's still hot. And make sure you put out any fire you might build before you leave it. In this way, you'll do your part in conserving our forests. And now, Dick Tracy.
I walked out onto the center of the stage and called to the stage manager.
Vitamin.
I said to him, "Me good man, I know the line. What is the name of the play we are doing?"
Vitamin.
Yes, my love?
Tracy is asleep, dear.
Asleep? Gad, do you mean to say that I've been telling that story to myself all this time?
You didn't seem to mind, darling.
Oh, yes, I didn't, did I? What? Tracy, old man, wake up. Wake up. What's up?
You, Tracy, you've been asleep.
Oh, I'm sorry. What time is it?
Half after two, old man.
Oh, good heavens. I've got an early conference with the fire commissioner in the morning. I've got to run. May I have my coat and hat, Vitamin?
Of course, old man. I'll get it for you.
Oh, well, I had a nice time at your party, Snowflake.
Oh, even if you did fall asleep.
Well, I'm sorry, Snowflake, but that series of fires we've been having in the city lately has kept me going day and night. You see, we suspect they're more than accidents.
Here's your hat and coat, old fellow.
Oh, thanks, Vitamin. Well, you're a wonderful cook, Snowflake. Well, thanks again for asking me over to dinner. Good night.
Oh, the telephone. Pardon me. This is the Flintheart apartment. Flintheart speaking.
Hi, Flint. Let me speak to Tracy, will you?
Why, Gravel Gertie.
Who'd you think it was, Greer Garson? Let me speak with Tracy. They told me he was at your flat.
Why, yes, he is, Gertie. Hold on, I'll get him. It's for you, old man. Gravel Gertie. Here.
Oh, thanks, Vitamin. Hello, Gertie.
Look, Tracy, I've been trying to call you ever since the big fire started.
Fire? Where?
Over here on River Street, 101. Where all those warehouses is.
Well, how long has it been burning?
About a half hour, Tracy. It looks pretty bad. I got an idea. Everything ain't strictly on the up and up, see? You see, I'm worried that my junkyard will burn up and...
Well, don't tell me about it over the phone. I'll be right over.
Yes, I know there have been a great many fires down in the warehouse district, old man. But what makes you suspect foul play?
Fires like that don't just happen, Vitamin. There's some reason behind all this.
Did you hear that, Tracy? We must be getting close.
Look at the sky up ahead, Vitamin.
Degad, hadn't noticed. The fire makes it as bright as midday.
Vitamin, 6 people have died since those fires started. I'd like to get my hands on the one who's causing them.
Oh, I see, old man. Isn't that a woman standing in the middle of the street just ahead up there?
Why, yes. It's Gravel Gertie. Stop the car, Vitamin. Gertie! Gravel Gertie!
Is that you, Tracy? I've been waiting here for you.
Oh, what is it, Gertie?
I think I got an idea about why them fires are being started, Tracy.
You have?
Yeah. You see that shack? Well, that's mine. And you see that yard piled high with scraps and junk? Well, that's also mine. Just read that there sign up there, will you?
Gravel Gertie, dealer in junk and factory scraps. I buy and sell anything.
You're in business?
Yeah, Tracy. And I'm doing okay, see?
Factory scraps and junk.
What's the matter with it, Flinthead?
Nothing at all, me dear woman.
Then shut up. And stop making with the raised eyebrow department.
Well, what did you want to tell me, Gertie? I want to get over to the fire.
Well, this. Some guy wants to get this here place away from me.
I can't understand why.
Look, Flint Brain, I told you before to shut up. Now you're going to do it or will I have to give you a hit in the head?
Sorry. Well, come on, Gertie. Tell us the story.
Well, this here guy comes around about a month ago and he asked me if I want to sell my lease. He wants to buy up the property around here, see?
Go on.
I tell him I ain't interested. And then he gets sore.
Yes?
First he offers more money. Then he starts making with the threats.
Well, what did he say? Like what?
Like he was going to have this here piece of property or else. That he needed it. Also, he says he needs some other property along the river here where the warehouses is, and he's going to get hold of that, too. That he had ways to get it.
I see. What's his name?
Oh, wait now. I got his card here. Yeah, I got it in my pocket. Now, let me see. Oh, yeah, here it is.
J.P. Doom, Real Estate, 209 River Street. Why, that's only a block or two from here. J.P. Doom. I know that name.
I don't quite follow all this, old man. Do you suspect this Doom person of setting the fires?
I don't know yet, Vitamin. There's that possibility. He's a shady character, mixed up in politics.
What could he hope to gain by getting this property, old sleuth?
Boy, Flint Topper, you dense. Look, there's been so many fires around this here neighborhood, you can't get insurance no more. Property owners is getting scared, so they sell out at this guy Doom's price. So he gets what he wants.
And what he wants is that river property. You know, Vitamin, there's a rumor afoot that the city is going to put the new superhighway through here.
Well, in that case, Doom will be able to name his own price and get it.
Are you going to the fire now, Tracy?
No, Gertie. We're going to investigate the office of J.P. Doom.
Come away from that window, Hotfoot. Stop watching that fire.
Not watch it. It's beautiful. Beautiful. And it's mine. I made it.
You know, Doom, I think he enjoys watching them fires. We make more than the money you pay us to make them.
Listen, you. I don't want to hear you say that.
Well, why not? It's true, ain't it?
Don't say it. Suppose someone were to hear you.
At 3 o'clock in the morning in your office? Why, there ain't nobody in this here building at this hour.
Just the same, don't say it.
They'll never stop it. It'll burn and burn and burn until there's nothing left.
Listen, Hotfoot, you should never have come back here to my office. Suppose you've been seen.
Nobody ever sees me make my fires, Doom. I am an artist. The fires don't start till Gimmick and I are out of the neighborhood at least 1 hour.
Yeah. I gotta hand that to you, Hotfoot. You got the alibi angle worked out fine.
That's because I'm smart. Smart. Well, Doom, what next? What do we burn tomorrow night?
Nothing.
Nothing? But you...
We're laying low for a few weeks. The police have been snooping around this district like a pack of bloodhounds.
They'll never catch me. I'm too clever for them.
No. Now, look, Hotfoot. I think Doom's right. take it easy for a while till the heat's off.
Don't forget, Tracy's working on this case.
Tracy. I'd like to match wits with Dick Tracy.
Yeah? Well, I wouldn't.
Someone knocked.
Yeah. How did anyone know we was here? The light's out.
Not the light from my fire. It lights up the whole city.
He's trying to unlock the door. Who's there?
Open up in there.
Go in the other office. You can slip out the other door after he comes in here. Close the door quietly.
Right. Come on.
All right, I'm coming.
Yeah?
J.P. Doom?
Yeah. What do you mean by trying to break into my office?
I'm Dick Tracy of the police. I thought I saw some men come in here. Thought I'd investigate.
Oh. I see. Come in, Mr. Tracy, come in.
Oh, thanks. Come in, Vitamin, and shut the door.
Righto, old sleuth.
There's no one here but me, Mr. Tracy.
Rather late to be at your office, Mr. Doom, isn't it?
Why, yes, Mr. Tracy, but when I heard there was another fire down here, I came right over.
Like fires, Mr. Doom?
Like them? I know, Mr. Tracy. But you see, I own considerable property down here.
And you're trying to buy more?
Yes. Anything criminal in that, Mr. Tracy?
Depends on the method you use, me fine fella.
Vitamin?
But, Tracy, Gravel Gertie said he made threats.
Vitamin, let me handle this.
Yes, quite proceed, old man.
Well, Mr. Doom, you heard what Mr. Flintheart said.
I assure you, Mr. Tracy, I never threatened Gravel Gertie. I tried to purchase the lease, yes, but that's all.
Well, Mr. Doom, it's your word against hers. But I'm going to get to the bottom of this whole business.
Surely you don't suspect me of having anything to do with these terrible fires.
I don't know, Mr. Doom. I don't know yet. But I'm going to find out. Come on, Vitamin.
Right behind you, Tracy, old tracer.
Oh, by the way, Doom.
Yeah?
Perhaps you've heard the rumor that the city is putting the new superhighway through that property you've been trying to buy up. Could that have anything to do with the fires?
Yeah. Gravel Gertie, eh? Huh? Who's there?
Don't get excited. It's us, Hotfoot and Gimmick.
Yeah. I thought you'd gone.
Well, Hotfoot wanted to hear what Tracy had to say, so we listened.
It's just as well you didn't go, boys.
Oh, yeah.
Remember? I said no fires for a while?
Yeah.
Well, that's out.
I know, I know. You want to get rid of Tracy, right?
Yeah. But first, we've got to get rid of Gravel Gertie. It would be a most unfortunate accident if...
Her place would burn down. Yes, yes.
It would be most unfortunate if her place would burn down with her in it.
This is a firearm safety PSA. No matter how you feel about current gun laws, everybody should know the most critical rules about handling any firearm. Rule 0, all guns are always loaded. Rule 1, never point a gun at anything you are not willing to destroy. Rule 2, keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you have made the decision to shoot. Rule 3, be sure of your target and what is beyond it. A public safety message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Gun safety. WMFO, Medford.
Okay, that was Act 1 of the case of the Firebug murders. Original air date, the 7th of March, 1938. On the Dick Tracy Show. I'm going to play the second act of that later on in the program. But first, I'm breaking up the show. I found this. This is directed by Alfred Hitchcock on a CBS program titled The Forecast. Its original air date was the 22nd of July, 1940. It It was a radio dramatization of a movie that he made in 1927 called The Lodger. Actually one of my personal favorites. So I'm going to go ahead and play this for you. You're listening to Arthur. This is the Grand Hour, 91.5 FM, WMFO Medford, WMFO.org.
Hollywood and CBS presenting Forecast Number 4. Herbert Marshall, directed by Alfred Hitchcock, in the first program of a proposed new series entitled Suspense. Tonight's Forecast program, ladies and gentlemen, represents the ideal form of collaboration. Mr. Alfred Hitchcock, brilliant English director of such outstanding motion pictures as The 39 Steps, Rebecca, and Foreign Correspondent, was eager to create a very special type of radio drama, the suspense story. As narrator and star for his production, he thought at once of the distinguished actor with whom he had been associated in countless British film successes, Herbert Marshall. Mr. Marshall suggested that they dramatize a certain favorite story of his. And that story happened to be the very one Mr. Hitchcock had in mind. Mrs. Bella Clown's classic in chills, The Lodger. The Lodger is a work of fiction which springs from recorded fact. A story which begins in the year 1888 in London. A London terrorized by the fifth in a succession of recent murders. It was believed that these deeds were the work of one person, a tall, gaunt figure in a black Inverness cape, carrying a small, narrow bag. That meager description, provided by a highly unnerved witness, was the sum total of all that was known of the murderer. It was enough, however, to keep alive and alert the interest of all London, of all those in fine quarters, and all those in small, grimy houses, as, for example, Ellen Bunting. Ellen was no different from all the other middle-aged housewives dwelling in the great city's squalid Whitechapel district. She knew all the known facts of the case. As Herbert Marshall will tell you, Ellen knew it was quite proper to refer to this wielder of the knife as
the Avenger. Of course, Ellen Bunting was far more concerned with her personal problems than with thoughts of the Avenger. Yet the case of that strange, elusive killer quite often forced all other matters from her mind. There was that mad, meaningless scheme he seemed to follow. All his victims, for example, had been women. All had been young, attractive, and, oddly enough, blonde. But Ellen could no more understand the motive for his brutal slashings than could the police. This night, she and her husband, Robert Bunting, sat before their fireplace reading the newspaper account of the latest murder. The Avenger had struck again. As Ellen expressed it, he might be anybody. He might be the fellow you pass on the street.
It's a terrible thought.
Yes. If only the police had something to go on. It looks like that Avenger's just too quick for him.
Look, it says here that this girl he got last night was like all the others.
Hmm.
Pretty, blonde, and, let's see, described by her friends as a very light-hearted girl. What a pity.
Did you ever stop to think who fits that to a T? In fact, fits all those girls?
Why,
my own Daisy.
Oh, that's a horrible thought. Well, maybe it's a good thing she's with her aunt, then, instead of here.
Hmm.
London ain't a safe place for any girl right now.
Just the same, I can't help thinking how fine it'll be to have her back here.
Now, Bunting, you know that Daisy seems just as much my own daughter as she is yours.
Hmm.
But I'm telling you, there's no sense even thinking about having her back right now. We just can't afford it.
Oh, I know that, Ellen. Only, well, maybe we could manage it some way.
How? Haven't I scripted myself half crazy trying to keep us going? But you don't care about that, do you? No, your Daisy's more important to you than I am.
No, really, Nellie, let them sound like
oh,
you.
Oh, I can't help if it don't. What are we going to do? Tell me that.
We'll get along here. Something will turn up.
Oh, we haven't had a lodger for months. Nobody even comes to look at the room anymore.
Yes, but things will work out, Ellie.
Oh, they ain't never going to work out. Soon we won't even have a roof over our heads and...
Oh,
I'm sorry, Robbie. I didn't mean to take on so...
Oh, I know, dear, I know. It's all right.
Oh, I didn't think it. It's just that I've been so worried.
Well, don't you go worrying another second, old girl. Why, first thing you know, you won't be pretty anymore. You'll have your face all wrinkled.
Now,
and
I'll see
now,
here.
Now, come on, now, let's see a smile. Come on, just have one smile for me. Just
alone,
one
I
smile
won't.
Like you used to, eh?
Well,
who do you suppose that could be?
Awful late for visitors, Bunting, do you think it could be somebody looking for rooms?
Well, it might be. Want me to go to the door?
No, I'll go.
Oh.
You just stay here.
Yes, all right. Now, be sure you get a good look at the wings before you let them in, dear.
Oh, I'm coming. Oh, I do hope it's... Yes, sir?
Is it not true that you let lodgings?
Yes, sir. Won't you come in, sir?
Thank you.
Could I take your cape, sir?
There's no need. No, I'm looking for a quiet room. It must be quiet.
Oh, we have that, sir. Above all, our house is quiet. Your bag, sir. May I take it?
No, I'll hold it. You'll be so good as to show me the room, please.
Oh, yes. Yes, sir. It's right up these stairs, sir. This way.
Thank you.
You see, sir, there's just my husband and me here, and we're ever so quiet, and I'm sure you'll find this room to your liking, sir. Here we are. Now, I'll just light the gas. There.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
It is pleasant, isn't it, sir? And there's not many rooms with such pretty pictures, are there now? We've had them in the family for years, sir, and...
Pictures interest me very little. You see, what really impresses me about the room is the very simplicity of it, the bareness.
Yes, sir. It's not at all crowded, is it?
It will be quite suitable, Mrs.
Bunting.
Mrs. Bunting. You see, I do a great deal of studying in my book here, the Holy Bible.
Yes, sir. Please, sir, let me help with your luggage.
No, don't touch it.
Oh, but I only wish to...
Oh, you only wish to help, of course. You must forgive me, Mrs. Bunting. It's just that I'm so very weary.
Of course, sir.
He bringeth them to their desired haven. Beautiful words, Mrs. Bunting.
Indeed they are, sir.
And now at last I have found my haven of rest.
Yes, sir. Then you'll be taking the room.
Let us see now. What are you going to charge me? With attendance, mind. I shall be staying in most of the time and I shall be wanting meals.
Oh, we can see to that, sir.
Then does... 30 shillings a week suit you?
Yes, sir, that will be quite all right.
Good, and I shall pay you in advance. My name is Sleuth, Mrs. Bunting.
Mr. Sleuth.
S-L-E-U-T-H. Think of a hound, Mrs. Bunting, and you'll never forget my name. 30 shillings.
Thank you, sir.
And I think I should enjoy a little light supper now, Mrs. Bunting. Bread and butter, perhaps. Could you arrange that?
Well, certainly, sir. I'll do that now. And if you'd be requiring any beer or spirits...
Certainly not.
Oh, sir. What did I say?
I thought you understood me, Mrs. Bunting, and I had hoped that you and your husband were abstainers.
But we are, sir. We don't keep nothing about. I would have had to go out and...
Of course. Oh, I'm sorry, Mrs. Bunting. I fear I spoke sharply. I don't wish you to think me rude. After all, you've been so kind, considerate.
I hope I know a gentleman when I see one.
Thank you very much.
Now I'll just hurry with your supper.
Ellen, did he take the room?
No, don't bother me now. I have to get him some supper.
What do you mean?
Come to the kitchen where he won't hear us.
He took it, Ellen?
Yes,
he took the room?
Yes, we're all right now. Look. 30 shillings.
No.
A week in advance.
Oh, it's wonderful. Wonderful. And Ellen, do you see what this means?
Yes, you can have Daisy now.
Yes.
Here, Bunting, warm that teapot and put some tea leaves.
Righto. Yeah, do you know something, old girl?
We're not going to worry too much about Daisy being in danger of that Avenger fella.
Whatever do you mean, Robbie?
Well, she's not a girl who takes a drink, you know.
Oh, what's that to do with it, please?
Oh, something I read in the paper while he was upstairs with the gentleman. They just found out that every one of the Avenger's victims had been drinking. They figured he must be some kind of a rabid abstainer.
What a peculiar chap. Now hurry, Bunting, please.
Yeah.
Two thoughts only governed Ellen's mind. The lodger's light supper and her own good fortune at having such a lodger. Mr. Sleuth was an eccentric sort, but then he was such a gentleman, so quiet, so very religiously inclined. She started up a staircase to Mr. Sleuth's room, her husband at her side.
Won't we know how to be safe, though, once Daisy's back in London, eh? We'll see she stays closer than the earth, Well, I'll be downstairs. Hurry up with his supper, old girl.
She has cast down many wounded from her. Yea, many strong men have been slain by her. Come in and know the wickedness of folly.
Why, Mr.
Yes? What is it?
Those pictures. Those pretty girls. You've turned all their faces to the wall.
And that maneuver, that strange action, was the beginning of Ellen's concern. Soon there came to her a recollection of the black Inverness cape, the small, narrow bag, the urgent matter of alcoholic drink. And these details began to shape themselves into a pattern which grew more disturbing with each passing hour. The day following, the lodger did not leave the upstairs room once, nor did he leave the next day. And the oddness of this took its place in the pattern. Then, too, the approaching arrival of Daisy, her stepdaughter, added to her concern. On the second night, her sleep was restless with vague, horrifying images. And so, when she heard the first stealthy footsteps outside her bedroom, she was instantly awake. Tensely, she followed those steps downstairs, down the hallway. She heard the front door open and then click shut. Utter stillness fell upon the house. And outside, the streets were so silent she could hear distinctly the clock from a church tower a mile away toll the hour. In her troubled frenzy, she pictured a lone figure plodding through the deep fog, moving quietly, stealthily, stalking, searching, finding. When, soon after she heard the lodger return, she sought to quiet the horrible dread which had possessed her. She assured herself that Daisy's arrival that day was no cause for alarm. Now she reasoned, how could there be anything really evil about so religious a gentleman as Mr. Sleuth? But for her, there was no more sleep, merely a tormented state of half-consciousness, a state which suddenly dropped from her shortly after daybreak. Horrible murder. That was the piercing scream of a newsboy far down the street.
The Avenger strikes during night!
Ellen Bunting heard the boy cry out the Avenger's latest stroke, made during the night. Ellen's first glimpse that morning of the grave-faced lodger brought the sleepless night's warm terror full to the surface. But on the next instant, she saw the pitiable, helpless weariness in his eyes, and curiously, the terror began to pass. She found that she was hoping desperately that her fears were unfounded. Earlier, she had determined to tell Bunting of the awful convictions in her mind. Now, however, she felt she must be certain. Certain before she spoke to a soul. She knew there was one thing she must examine. That was the lodger's single piece of luggage. She'd thought of it often. What could it hold? Not much in the way of clothing, surely. It was too small, too narrow. It was more like a case. A case for a knife.
toward noon, the Reverend found her opportunity to search the lodger's room. Soon after Bunting left to meet Daisy, Mr. Sleuth himself walked from the house. Ellen watched the tall, thin figure in the black Inverness cape disappear down the street, and then she rushed upstairs, into the room. Quickly, she moved to the closet. It was no different from what it had always been, utterly empty. She found nothing under the bed. She went then to the chest of drawers against the wall. She opened the top drawer and found inside nothing but a frayed shirt, two handkerchiefs. The next drawer, underclothes, socks. The next, empty. There remained then only one possible place for the small, narrow bag, the bottom drawer, and it was locked. Tugging at the drawer, she heard suddenly the opening of the front door downstairs. Panic-stricken, she rushed out of the room and down the hall to the head of the stairs.
Upstairs, Ellen! Daisy's here!
Oh, Mother Ellen, it's so good to see you. Well, whatever's the matter?
Yes, you've gone quite white.
Oh, well, I'm all right. I wasn't expecting you so soon.
Oh, you don't know how fine it is to be back, Mother Ellen. Now, the country's all right in its way, but there's nothing like London now, is there?
No, there isn't.
But as long as that adventure's about, I can see we're going to have to do something about these blonde locks, eh, Ellen?
Oh, don't worry about that. I'll dye them, maybe, or just pin them under my hat.
Daisy, I might as well get you settled.
Oh, now, Father, isn't that just like her? She's straight to the point, and no point.
Well, I'll bet a sixpence you'll have a dust cloth in your hand before you've got your coat off.
Mr. Sleuth. Mrs. Bunting, I see my door is open.
Oh, we were just leaving, shall we?
Does this mean that all of you have been in my room?
Oh, not at all, sir.
What must I do? Keep it locked?
But you see, sir, I was just tidying up a bit, and Mr. Bunting, he brought his daughter up, sir. She just arrived. This is Daisy, sir.
Pleased to meet you, sir.
She's been away for quite a long while, you see, Mr. Sleuth, and that's why we're a bit excited, you might say.
Yes, you must have been surprised when you came in, hearing us laughing and carrying on that way.
Yes, I must say I was. However, Miss Daisy, there are all types of joy, are there not?
Yes, I'm sure there are.
The despicable evil joy of the abandoned and the divine happiness of the blessed. A vast difference, that. You do understand me, don't you?
Yes, sir. Yes, Mr. Sleuth.
I devoutly hope so, Miss Daisy. Nowadays, there are so very few young women like yourself who do. In fact, I all but despaired ever of finding one.
If you'll excuse us now, sir, we'll be getting Daisy's things put away.
Of course, Mrs. Bunting, and I must be getting to my room. Believe me, Miss Daisy, it's been a revelation to meet you.
Oh, thank you, sir.
I'm sure we shall have much to discuss.
He's a queer one, all right. But such a gentleman, you see.
At that moment, Ellen had been determined to pour out her terrible knowledge, and then the moment passed by. She told herself that perhaps the past few days had been nothing more than a grim illusion, a tormenting play of imagination. She would wait then until she had attended the coroner's inquest into the last avenger murder. There, perhaps, she could hear evidence to disprove all her fears, to assure her there was no earthly harm in Daisy being so near the lodger. This was her gravest concern now, for on the next day, Mr. Sleuth made it a point to see the girl more than once. And fearfully, Ellen saw that Daisy welcomed his visits. As Ellen was preparing to step out to the inquest, she heard once more the voices of her stepdaughter and the lodger coming to her through the kitchen door. She hesitated before entering. Tense. Strangely apprehensive.
I do believe this is you. I've never known a gentleman with such funny ideas. Oh, Mother Ellen, you should hear what Mr. Sleuth was just saying.
Perhaps, Daisy, you would excuse yourself.
He thinks people, and especially girls, should spend all their time praying.
I sought to explain, Mrs. Bunting, that all women are placed on this earth filled with evil. They therefore must struggle constantly to find the paths of righteousness.
Why, Mr. Sleuth? You mean a girl's not to enjoy life at all? Not to have fun?
Frivolity, my child, is the devil's breeding ground. And all his implements are there. Temptation, pleasure, wine.
Oh, that's crazy. Well, there's nothing I like better than a glass of wine. And I'm...
You drink.
She didn't know what she was saying, Mrs. Lou. Just a child. And Daisy, you'd better go now.
But I didn't say nothing wrong. What's the harm in a glass of wine?
She lieth in wait as for a prey, and increaseth the transgressors among men.
Oh, I don't know what you mean. I never heard such nonsense.
You call Holy Scripture nonsense?
So what I prayed against is true. You are beyond salvation.
That's not so. I'm a good girl, I am, and I won't have you saying
that. Daddy, go into the front room.
Quite all right, Mrs. Bunting. I must be going upstairs anyway. I'm used to being misunderstood, you know. People never realize that my efforts are simply for the greater good of humanity.
Of course, sir.
And that the power on high will direct my hand toward the expulsion of all evil.
Daisy, does he listen to me?
Yes.
I've got to tell you about...
About what, Mother Ellen?
Nothing. I've got to go out for a while now. I'll be back.
The moment to reveal the secret horror had come again and passed. Erin's sudden recollection of Mr. Sleuth as he stood in the doorway had overwhelmed her. She must give him this last chance, this last frantic search for disproving evidence, this trip to the inquest. If that chance should fail, then she would tell Bunting or the police. So with the knowledge that Bunting was left in the house to look after Daisy, she boarded the underground train bound for the coroner's court. But as the train pulled away from the station, a new torture came to her, began to mount in her mind. It was the sudden realization that provided Sleuth was the murderer, she was equally responsible for his crimes. She had been giving him protection.
Protection.
If anything should happen to Daisy, she would be equally guilty.
Guilty.
Fully as guilty as the Avenger. Ellen, seated at the rear of a small but crowded inquest room, listened to each of the witnesses as they were called. And from one of them, she found the first hope she had known for many days. This witness lived next to the alley in which the Avenger had committed his crime that night. She had seen him from her window, and the man she described in no way resembled Evan's lodger. But in another moment, Evan's hope was swept away. It was pointed out that the fog had been so heavy that night that the witness could not possibly have seen the murderer from her window. She left the stand, replaced by a Mr. Kennett. This elderly gentleman was certain that he had not only seen, but talked with the Avenger. It was in Regent's Park he testified, only a few moments before...
A few moments before the murder, Mr. Coroner. When I saw him, he was quite a tall man, very gaunt-looking, and carrying a handbag.
A handbag, you say?
Yes, a small, narrow one. Just such a bag, I might add, as might contain a knife.
As Ellen heard these words, the tension which had been mounting up within her became almost unbearable. Rigid with horror, she gripped the arms of her chair. She heard the coroner...
I shall have to ask for more order in the court. And now, Mr. Kennett, I understand you heard this man speak.
Oh, yes. He had a rather high, hesitating voice. An educated man, I would judge, but quite mad.
What do you mean by that?
Well, as he emerged from the fog, he was talking aloud to himself. Believe me, sir... He was reciting scriptures from the Bible.
Scriptures from the Bible. Horrified, Ellen rose from her seat, only half hearing the confusion about her.
Are you asking us to believe? I would say, Mr. Kennett, that the man we are looking for would be least of all a religious man.
And that's where you're in error, Mr. Coroner. The religious note is the very key to the case.
Very interesting. That'll be all, Mr. Cannon.
Just a moment, sir. Don't you understand? The man you're after must be a religious maniac. That's the only explanation possible.
You will please stand down.
The court was dismissing the very truth. Ellen knew that now. She would no longer keep silent. Her hand shot forth and she screamed.
I want to say...
Ellen Bunting, on the verge of speaking, had fainted. And then, when she was revived a few moments later, she said nothing. Her brain was in too great a turmoil, her nerves too shocked. Like one in a dream, she allowed herself to be led from the courtroom, The voices of spectators were only vague sounds.
I thought she was going to say something.
Yes, it was hysterics.
Eh? Yeah, that bit about the knife.
The knife.
As Ellen Bunting proceeded home, the remarks from the spectators remained in her mind. She heard them over and over.
Such a bag as might contain a knife.
We'll see she stays closer in the house, eh? No harm in being safe.
Direct my hand toward the expulsion of all evil. Expulsion of all evil.
That's for her and a glass of wine. I didn't say nothing more.
As Ellen neared her neighborhood, her dread increased. With each moving footstep, the grip of terror grew tighter, tighter about her. She moved faster, faster. If only she were in time. She was 2 streets away from the house. Then one. Then she saw Bunty. Sharply, like the thrust of a knife, she realized what this meant. Daisy was left alone with the lodger.
Bunting, tell me, Bunting. Where's Daisy? Where is she? I say, where?
Well, at home.
Oh, listen to me. Try to understand. Sleuth is the Avenger.
What are you saying?
Our lodger. He's the Avenger, Bunting. Oh, but there's no time for that. Daisy's in danger. Hurry. Hurry.
Yes. Daisy. Daisy!
Kitchen, Bunting. You try the sitting room. Daisy!
Daisy!
Where are you, Daisy?
Answer me! Daisy!
Oh.
By the bedroom.
Jeez, she's not here. What about the dining room?
Oh, look, she's not there. She's not downstairs.
Then there's just his room. Go on. Open the door.
Cop, what's the idea, Hitch? I have a few more lines to do.
As Mr. Marshall, the narrator, you have. Not as Mr. Sleuth, the lodger.
Hitch, you can't stop the play right here. It isn't fair, you know.
Why isn't it, Bart? What more is there to say?
But Mr. Hitchcock, won't people want to know what Bunting and me found in the room?
All right, Ellen. What precisely did you find?
Well, nothing, sir.
There. You see? Nothing. No lodger, no Bible. And that locked dresser drawer. What about that?
We unlocked it, sir.
And what was in it?
Nothing, sir.
You are certain, Mrs. Bunting?
Oh, you gave me quite a turn, Mr. Sleuth. I mean, Mr. Marshall. Yes, sir, I'm sure, sir. There was nothing.
Oh, begging your pardon, Mr. Hitchcock, but don't you think we'd better just mention about Daisy?
I don't know, Bunting. What do you think we ought to say?
Oh, just that the reason she wasn't in the house when Ellen and me got there was, well, she'd gone out for a walk, that's all.
Did she enjoy it?
Oh, very much, sir. Made it to King's Cross and back in just under an hour, sir.
Splendid time, Bunting. Well, there you are.
And this is the Grand Hour on 91.5 FM, WMFO Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. I'm going to conclude the last portion of the show with The Case of the Firebug Murders, Act 2, from the Dick Tracy that I started the show off with. And then original air date on that was the 7th of March, 1938. Up next is The Whirlpool with Matt. Unless I missed something and he's not going to be here. But thanks for listening and enjoy the rest of the 11th of July.
Let's return to Dick Tracy and The Case of the Firebug Murders.
And I'll never see my Nellie anymore. Ah, a man's wake from sun to sun. A woman's wake is never done. Ain't it the truth? Now, who can that be? At this time of night, too. Well, don't get in an uproar. I'm coming.
Oh, hello, Gertie.
Well, Snowflake. Come on in, dearie. Come in. I wasn't expecting no visitors. You see, I was just about ready to hit the hay. Ain't this shack a mess?
Gertie, have you seen Vitamin this evening?
Vitamin? No. Him and Tracy was here last night, but
then you haven't seen him.
Not tonight, I ain't. Tracy was around the neighborhood this afternoon and looking around, but your husband wasn't with him.
Oh, dear.
Well, what's the matter, dearie? Worried?
Went out after lunch to see his agent, he said. And here it is 11 o'clock at night, and I haven't heard a word from him.
Now, ain't that just like a man? Well, what made you think he was here?
He told me that he and Tracy had been here to see you last night.
And you think he's with Tracy tonight, huh?
I don't know, Gertie. I don't know. I tried to reach Tracy, but he wasn't at his office.
Say, maybe that's them now. Just a minute, dearie. Yeah?
Hello, Gertie. Remember me?
Oh, remember? How could I forget my best customer? Come in, come in.
Come on in, Gimme.
Yeah.
Now, what can I do for you two gents? The regular order? 15 pounds of magnesia scraps?
Yeah, Gordy. That's right, huh, Hotfoot?
No gimmick. Hmm? We want a double order tonight.
Double?
Yeah.
Okay. I got at least a ton of that stuff. Bought it from that small parts factory. Oh, I beg your pardon. This is Mrs. Flintheart. This is two customers of mine, Hotfoot and Gimmick.
How do you do?
How do you do?
I'll get the scraps for you. I got them back here.
Did you say Flintheart?
Yes. Do you know my husband?
Know him, Mrs. Flintheart.
We don't know him, Mrs. Flintheart, but, as a matter of fact, we nearly met him last night. Didn't we, Gimmick?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was with Tracy.
Oh, you haven't seen him this evening.
No, lady, we ain't seen him, but we'd like to.
Oh.
Fine gents, you are letting a lady lug a heavy box like this without trying to help her.
Oh, sorry, Gertie, here. Let Gimmick take that.
Yeah.
Too late now. Well, there you are. 30 pounds of magnesia scrap. Now, that'll be, let me see now. 25 cents a pound. 4 goes into 15 and carry the 1. $6.35.
Okay, Gertie. Give her the money, Gimmick.
Okay.
Say, by the way, what do you use this here stuff for?
We treat this with special chemicals. To set fires.
Oh, sure, to set fires. Why didn't I know? What?
Sure, Gertie. We set all the fires in this neighborhood.
Oh.
Why, you dirty so-and-sos. I'm going out and call Dick Tracy on the payphone and tell him.
He ain't gonna go out and leave this here shack, Gertie.
He's got a gun.
That's right. Okay, Gimmick. Tie him up.
Well, you ain't gonna get away with this when I tell Dick Tracy.
You're not gonna tell anyone anything again, Gertie. Because we're going to shut you up forever.
Police headquarters, Tracy speaking.
Oh, Tracy, old man, found you at last. I've been trying to get you for the last 20 minutes.
Well, I just got back to my office, Vitamin. What is it?
Snowflake's not at the apartment.
What happened? She go home to mother?
Oh, no, nothing like that. She thought I was with you and went out to find us. I've been with me theatrical agent all day. I forgot to call her and tell her.
Well, she'll be home soon, Vitamin. Good night. I'm going home and get some rest.
Wait a minute, Tracy. She's gone to Gravel Gertie's shack. Left me a note saying that.
Gravel Gertie's?
I'm worried, old man. Remember you told me last night that you were going to keep a watch on Gertie's place for fear J.P. Doom would try to get even with her for telling you...
About his threats. It completely slipped my mind. I've been so busy today.
Do you think there's any danger, old man?
I'm afraid maybe there is, Vitamin.
Well, what shall I do, Tracy? My poor dear wife is there.
Vitamin, meet me in front of your hotel in 5 minutes. We're going to Gravel Gertie's, and I hope we won't be too late.
Gertie! Gertie! Open up!
Well, there's no answer, old sleuth. Do you think she's home?
Well, there seems to be some sort of light inside.
Can't see anything through the window. It's too sooty.
Well, stand back, Vitamin. I'm going to crack that door open. One small ought to do the trick.
Well, I don't see...
Good heavens! Look, Tracy, Snowflake and Gertie bound and gagged. Oh, my darling little wife.
Get the gags off them, Vitamin. I'll put that candle out. We didn't get here a minute too soon. Those magnesium scraps would have caught fire and then...
Hear me, love. Now you can speak.
Oh, Vitamin. Vitamin.
Oh, come on, Mrs. Miller.
Oh, yes. Take the gag out of Gertie's mouth, Vitamin, darling.
Oh, yes, of course, me love. There.
Tracy, them rats was trying to kill us. They tied us up, then they was going to...
Wait a minute, Gertie. Wait a minute. Not so fast. Who tied you up and who wanted to kill you?
Them two rats, Hotfoot and Gimmick. They come in here and then they shot...
Then they what, Gertie?
Oh.
Reach, Tracy.
That's them, Tracy.
No, don't turn around, Tracy. Just stand there and keep your hands up. That's right. Okay, Gimmick. Looks like we got them all.
Yeah, Doom won't have nothing to worry about now.
You see, Tracy, we were waiting across the street to see whether the women would be able to escape. Then we saw you and Flintheart drive up and... We couldn't pass up that golden opportunity, could we?
So it is J.P. Doom, eh?
That's right, Tracy. But now you'll never be able to bother him again. Or us either. Get his gun, Gimmick.
Right, Hotfoot.
Oh, sure, sure. Now you...
He's got on me, Hotfoot. Hey,
we'll stop that.
Oh, Tracy.
Tracy, he's down.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
Tracy thought he'd try something, did he? Okay, Gimmick. Now tie them all up good.
Yeah, yeah. You want the gags again?
No. No gags. They can yell all they want to now. It will all be over very soon. No one will hear them.
How is Tracy, my dear? I can't see him. They have me tied to this chair, and I'm facing the other way.
He's still unconscious, Vitamin. Tracy. Tracy, please wake up, Tracy.
If I ever get out of this here place alive, I'm going to make them two rats rich they were never born.
The candle is rapidly running out. Or is it the sands of time?
Tracy. Tracy.
That there candle's getting mighty low. Close to that there magnesia.
Out, out, brief candle. Life is but a walking shadow. A poor player who struts and frets his weary hour upon the stage and then is heard no more.
Ah, shut up. Ain't it bad enough to have to die? Do you have to make with a torture, too?
Why, me good woman, I was quoting.
Tracy, he's waking up.
Oh, my head.
Tracy. Tracy.
Oh, where am I?
We're all here in Gertie's shack.
Tied up, waiting for the end, old man.
What's that?
In a moment, the candle will ignite the magnesium scraps, and then we...
Oh, I've got to get these ropes off my hands.
Tracy, it's no use. We've been trying to get our own ropes off for the last 20 minutes while you were unconscious.
Yeah, can't be did, Tracy.
In my language, there's no such word as can't.
It's impossible, old friend.
Well, I certainly did a good job. But we've got to get out of here before that candle burns. I've got it.
Got what, old Houdini?
I wonder if I can roll over to the candle.
Tracy, what are you going to do?
I'm going to try to burn the ropes off my hands by holding them over the candle flame.
Good idea, Tracy. But careful with the candle. If it gets knocked over into them scraps, this place will go up so fast we won't know what happened.
I've got to take that chance.
Got it yet, old smoke eater?
There. Now.
Oh, hurry, Tracy, hurry. The candle's so low. The stuff will catch fire in a minute.
Come on, come on. Burn through. Burn through. The ropes have got to burn through.
Why doesn't it burn? Why doesn't it burn?
I thought you said the shack would burn down in about 20 minutes. What's taking so long?
It will. Don't be impatient. It should go up in about 30 seconds. Come over here to the back window of the office and see it happen.
No. I don't want to see it.
You come over here, Gimmick. Come on. It'll make quite a sight.
No, I don't want to see it either.
The candle is very short. And what a blaze it will make. The shack is full of oily waste rags and magnesium scraps. It'll be the biggest blaze I've ever set.
Come away from that office window. Someone might see you.
What are you so nervous about, Doom? You're getting everything just the way you want tonight. Tracy and the others out of the way. And now you're in the clear.
What about my conscience?
Conscience? Have you got a conscience?
Oh, no, cut it out. This ain't no time to argue. We all gotta hang together now. We're in pretty deep.
Hang together?
Yeah.
What an unpleasant way of putting it. But don't think you can get rid of us, J.P. We're going to stick around.
Hey, gosh, look at the sky.
Huh?
It's all lit up. The shack's caught fire.
Huh? Yes. Come on, let's watch it from the window.
Yeah. Hey, look at it burn.
Well, that's the end of Dick Tracy, boys. He'll never bother us again.
All right. Tracy. All of you.
Tracy.
Keep your hands up, Doom.
Murder.
You too, Hotfoot. Come on in, Vitamin.
Right, old fire eater.
Take their guns away while I keep them covered.
Yes,
Tracy, old man. Well, what are you laughing at, Hotfoot?
I just remembered something, Tracy. Something very funny. You can take your hand out of your coat pocket. You haven't got a gun. We took it away from you.
Gad, discovered.
Now you get your hands up, Tracy. I'm boss now.
Tracy, he's got your gun.
Hey, Hotfoot, he grabbed a chair. Look out.
Why, you.
Watch out, old man. Two down and one to go.
Stop. I give up.
Okay, Mr. Doom. Okay. Vitamin?
Yes, old slugger. What a battle, old man. Hotfoot and Gimmick out in two punches. What a battle.
All right, get on the phone, Vitamin. Call headquarters. Tell them to send a trap over here to pick up three rats.
Righto! We did it again, didn't we, old gumshoe?
Yes, I guess we did, Vitamin. The next time these boys come in contact with anything hot, it'll be the chair in the death house of the state prison.
That came up abruptly. I wasn't expecting that to end so soon. Matt's getting ready for the whirlpool. I want to thank the caller who called in, bringing up the six shooter. I will return with more six shooter probably towards the end of the summer. I only have half a season left, and that only ran for one season. So it's, I'm kind of trying to savor it while I can. And right now I'm just stalling. Because, nobody likes dead air. Matt's getting prepared here for the whirlpool. It's the 11th of July, and you're listening to 91.5 FM, WMFO Medford. Tufts Freeform Radio. I'm going to go ahead and play Any Old Time by Artie Shaw until Matt's ready. Thanks for listening. Again, have a nice 11th of July.